This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. Well, I've got to tell you, I'm a little bummed today. Oh, don't get me wrong, I'm thrilled to be here with you, but this is the last weekend of the Family Research Council Alaska Cruise, and I wasn't able to join them. Of course, I'm not the only one. Much of the staff stayed in D.C., keeping an eye on Congress, and of course, making sure we had another stellar radio program for you today. So hats off to Alice Chow and Macy Malone from the communications team for their work on today's show. Speaking of the FRC cruise, while Tony was spending his week afloat, Dr. Ronnie Floyd sat in for him this week on the Washington Watch Live radio program. Dr. Floyd is a former president of the Southern Baptist Convention and the senior pastor of Cross Church in Springdale, Arkansas. A little later in the show, we'll hear from Dr. Floyd as he sat down with Susan Hagee to talk about the significance of the Jewish Day of Fasting, as well as CNS editor Terry Jeffrey as they talk about Christian refugee immigration. But first, earlier this week, Congress passed a bill that President Trump signed, which places sanctions on Russia and North Korea. Dr. Ronnie Floyd sat down with Senator John Boozman of Arkansas to talk about those sanctions.
President Trump said he reluctantly signed a Russia sanctions bill this week, calling it seriously flawed. What do you think about those remarks? And he even stated that it's at an all-time and various dangerous low regarding the U.S. relationship with Russia. Senator Boozman, what are your thoughts about these things?
Hey, Ronnie, thank you so much for having me on, as always, and I certainly appreciate you. This is a very, very good bill. You know, we hear a lot about Congress not getting anything done, and not only is this a very strong bill dealing with Russia, Iran, and North Korea, but it's also a very bipartisan bill and passed Congress overwhelmingly, which is a good thing. I think the president's concern was the fact that traditionally, and it wouldn't matter if it was President Trump or Obama or Bush, they feel like and argue that constitutionally that they simply pretty much have almost full control, great deal of control over foreign affairs. And so the argument is that in order for them to improve things, they need to have leverage. Well, Congress is so upset with Russia, so upset with Iran and North Korea. They basically said, you know, we're tired of this. We want these things done, and wrote it in that manner. So the president, you know, signed the bill, which is a good thing, because we would have, if he had vetoed it, we would have passed it over it. But I'm not surprised that himself and then also the State Department, both the career and the political appointees, you know, had problems with it.
Well, you know, Special Counsel Robert Mueller today has impaneled a grand jury to investigate Russia's meddling in the 2016 election, according to the Wall Street Journal. And the move is seen as a sign that the investigation into the campaign of President Trump is heating up and entering a new phase. Do you know much about this at all, or do you think this is just a part of the process, Senator Boozman?
No, I think this is just part of the process, Ronnie, and what I want, I know what you want, and the rest of the country is, you know, is a full, impartial evaluation. We're a nation of laws. None of us are above the law.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, we've got this investigation going on. We've also got the investigation going on by Senator Burr, who's chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and then a number of other things going on in the House. So all trying to get to the bottom of, you know, the various phases of this. And the main thing is it just needs to be fair, and they need to, you know, they need to follow it where it runs. But they also need to follow it not only on the Republican side, but also on the Democrat side. If it leads to Hillary and places like that, then they need to do a good job of tracking that down also. And I think there is a concern that perhaps we haven't done a good job of holding you know, that group accountable as we should.
Yes. Well, you know, your colleague, Senator Graham, thinks that the United States has an option now to launch a preemptive strike on North Korea. Obviously, there's so much on the desk of the foreign relationships today and all that's going on. We're in a very dangerous and critical hour in our country. What are your thoughts about the North Korea situation and even in regard to what Senator Graham brought up earlier?
Well, it's really a difficult situation. You've got China sitting there, and I'm pleased that the president is really leaning on them, trying to get them to play a bigger role. North Korea has very little factory capacity or anything like that. All of their energy supplies and stuff needs to come in, their food, and a lot of that comes through China. So they really can ratchet down more if they would. As far as a preemptive strike, we could do that, but then you've got a situation where China would have perhaps, excuse me, several hundred thousand, or even more so, refugees showing up on their border. They're very concerned about that. They're concerned about the reunification of the North and the South, if the North were overthrown. So, and the list goes on and on. On the other hand, you can't have a full-fledged nuclear North Korea. I'm afraid you're going to have nuclear proliferation. The South Koreans are very, very nervous about that. There would be a good chance that they would go nuclear. Japan also, Taiwan. What we don't need is nuclear proliferation in Asia. Mm-hmm. So the stakes are high. There's no easy situation, but this is something that we need to be talking to our allies about, talking to the continuing, you know, to put pressure on China, also talking to South Korea and Japan that are right there in the area. So again, there's no easy answer. On the other hand, we can't have a situation where they're able to send ballistic missiles our way.
Yes, that's correct. Well, in relationship to Iran, Iran has even stated that they are willing to retaliate against the U.S. sanctions that have been signed into law on Wednesday, arguing that they break the terms of the nuclear deal it reached with Washington and other powers. Well, do you believe Iran will retaliate, Senator Bozeman?
Yeah, I don't know if they will or not. To be honest, I don't trust them as far as I can throw them. Mm-hmm. This deal is such that after a decade, they can pretty much do whatever they want to do from a nuclear standpoint. What we've done is legitimize their, at that point, you know, we legitimize them becoming a nuclear power. As I said about Asia, you've got the same situation there. If they go nuclear, then Saudi Arabia is going to want to go nuclear. Turkey's going to want to go nuclear. And the list goes on because they're scared to death of the, you know, you've got the religious faction, but also you've got the huge enmity through the years. And I know that you realize this better than anybody as a biblical scholar and just a scholar in general of history, just the enmity between the Arab nations and the Persians. Mm-hmm. They're scared to death of them. So this is another hot spot, but I'm for, you know, the sanctions. I voted for it. Congress overwhelmingly voted for it. We need to hold them accountable.
Absolutely. Well, I know that you're also involved in this comprehensive GI reform package bill that's going on. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Senator?
Yeah, no, this is something, Ronnie, that's so important. You know, these are things that really do make a big difference in people's lives. In the mid-2000s, we were able to revamp the GI Bill and make it so much better, so much more helpful to the average veteran. And so what we're doing now, what we've just done that's going to get signed in the next few days, is tweaking that. And there were things like, you know, if you say you were injured, say you were a Purple Heart recipient, normally you have to be in the service for 3 years. Well, say you got shot, you know, within a year. Mm-hmm. You still deserve the fact that you paid that kind of price for your country. You deserve not only a Purple Heart, but you also deserve the GI Bill. So we fixed that. There was another situation regarding a similar thing where if you were in the Guard or Reserve, if you got injured, and then they didn't count your healing time, you know, towards so lots of these kind of things. The world has changed a lot since the mid-2000s, and so we were able to actually insert an amendment that had to do with making it easier to get certificates for things like coding, you know, cyber type things that hadn't been included in the past because they weren't part of our society back then. So it's just a good cleanup of the GI Bill. And the other thing, Ronnie, that again is so important, you know, we hear a lot about simply not being able to get anything done. This was a very, very bipartisan effort.
That's great.
And so, you know, it got done, and it's good for our men and women that have served or are serving our country right now.
Yeah, I'm sure that all the things that you do get done that are bipartisan, you guys probably and ladies would love to be able to shout to America, hey, we do things together. Nobody just gets to talk about those always, do they?
No, that's exactly right. We're people are real loggerheads when it comes down to budgeting, you know, how you spend money.
Sure.
You know, growing government, not growing government, you know, those kind of things. And then healthcare, you know, certainly there's a real difference of opinion in regard to that. Many of my colleagues on the other side want to push it more towards a single payer. In other words, to fix Obamacare with more Obamacare. That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's right. Well, thank you, Senator Bozeman, for what you're doing in the country. Thanks for being on the Washington Watch today. We really do appreciate you very much.
Well, appreciate you. Appreciate your friendship and all you do for Arkansas.
You can find out more about Senator Bozeman when you visit TonyPerkins.com. While you're there, why don't you consider a gift to Family Research Council as they continue to fight for your values in Washington, D.C. and around the country. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back to talk about a significant date on the Jewish calendar.
The Center for Medical Progress continues to release shocking videos that expose the lies and crimes of Planned Parenthood. David DeLayden, the heroic undercover journalist behind the videos, was recently exonerated from the charges filed against him. Come to Values Voter Summit to hear from David DeLayden in person as he discusses his journey and the courage it takes to stand up for the unborn. With a new pro-life administration in place, America's primed for change. Seize the moment by attending this year's Values Voter Summit. VVS will give you the tools to inform and mobilize your community to protect the unborn and defund Planned Parenthood. Also, take advantage of this incredible opportunity to network with like-minded individuals. Invited and confirmed speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Lash, Franklin Graham, Ollie North, and many more. Join us at Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Register now at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Earlier this week, Jews all over the world celebrated Tisha B'Av, or a day of mourning. And on Tuesday, Dr. Ronnie Floyd, this week's guest host, talked with Susan Hagee, president of Abundant Hope International in Israel. Together, they talked about the historical significance of this day of fasting. Here's Dr. Ronnie Floyd.
Well, Susan, you work with Holocaust survivors, Barry and Bob there in Israel, and I want you to explain to all of our listeners today why this day is important and why Christians should be supportive of our friends in Israel.
Well, the destruction of the First and Second Temple is the main reason that they observe this day with fasting. And the readings that they have in the synagogues are only sad readings. They do not read anything on this day except for Lamentations and other sad readings. And the interesting thing is most Christians don't realize that Lamentations is the prophecy of the Holocaust. When you have verses in there that say, our skin is hot as an oven, that the women are cooking their children, that the children are saying to their mothers, where is bread? And they faint like wounded men in the streets. It's a description of the Holocaust. and the Holocaust has been in several different things besides the destruction of the temple. The Jews being expelled in Spain, the Jews being expelled from England. All of it happened on this day. It's a day of tragedies. What I find very interesting is the Jewish people, especially the Holocaust survivors, look at this day differently than I would as a sad day. It is a sad day for them, yes. But their desire and their wish is that the Messiah will return on this day to turn their mourning into joy, just like in Isaiah 61. This is their, what they look forward to on this day. They hope the Messiah returns.
Hmm. Well, Susan, let me ask you this question. Why don't you tell us about what you do over there with Abundant Hope International in relationship to working with the Jewish people?
Well, the Holocaust survivors are, for the most part, a forgotten people. Most people in the world don't even really know about the Holocaust. I've actually had people ask me, what do you do? And I say, I work with the Holocaust. They ask me if it's a new movie or a new video. Mm-hmm. They don't know. So education is important to me, and the only way I can educate is to get to know these people. And how do you get to know someone? You find out what they need. And so that's what we do. We bring them abundant hope. We go in and we find out what they need. If it's fixing the plumbing in their bathroom, we do that. Painting their apartments. Bringing them some joy by, we give flowers on their birthday. It's a very important day. Mm. And we have events, concerts. But the survivors are getting older, and they can't leave their apartments, many of them. So how in the world are they supposed to meet people or do anything? Well, we have a house in Akko where volunteers come. And the volunteers help us by either cleaning in their homes, visiting in their homes, bringing music to their homes because they can't go to a concert. So we bring the concert to them. Mm. We replace the heirlooms that they lost. Whatever it is they need, as long as we can honor them, that's our goal.
Well, thank you for honoring them. And, you know, Susan, we go to Israel quite often, and we'll be there next July on the 5th through the 14th. I'll be taking a group from America. Being in a one-day conference over there in a special way with Joel Rosenberg and with Ann Graham Lotz, and we look forward to that experience, always going to Israel. In our final minute or so, let me ask you this question. What kind of relationship and why should Americans be supportive of Israel?
Well, the only way that you're going to get blessed is if you bless the Israeli people. Genesis tells us that in 12:3. But you would be amazed at how glad they are to know that anyone cares about them. They cry. We go and we tell them we love you, and they cry. Hmm. Americans need to make a difference here in Israel. They're God's people. Jesus is Jewish. We have to remember that. Hmm. It's his people. And I would like to invite you to come to our house and visit survivors and bring your people.
Well, thank you, Susan. Well, it's great to talk to you today. And we want to thank you on the Washington Watch for all that you do. And so what a joy it's been today to talk with Susan Hagee, the president of Abundant Hope International over there in the country of Israel.
You can find out more about Susan's ministry, Abundant Hope International, when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit tonyperkins.com. When we come back, a look at the latest on the refugee crisis.
What does a children's playground have to do with the Supreme Court? A lot. In April 2017, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a case of religious discrimination against Missouri's Trinity Lutheran Church. Trinity has an adjacent playground that needed refurbishing, so the staff applied for a Missouri grant program. In an odd twist, state officials denied Trinity's request. When the church asked why, they were told the state constitution barred the public treasury from aiding any church, section, or denomination of religion. That hardly seemed fair to the church, whose children at the daycare and preschool need just as much outdoor padding as other school children. This is just one of hundreds of religious liberty violations that have occurred in the United States, and FRC is at the forefront of the movement to preserve, protect, and defend religious liberty. In a newly updated publication, we catalog the growing threat to religious liberty with a comprehensive report of documented accounts of religious liberty violations that have occurred in the last 17 years. Go to frc.org/hostility for this exclusive publication.
For nearly 40 years, Washington and much of the American public have held up disclosure and campaign finance laws as ideals and the path to cleaner and freer elections. In her new book, The Intimidation Game, Kimberly Strassel provides firsthand accounts concerning how both have been hijacked by the left as weapons against free speech and free association, becoming the most powerful tools of those intent on silencing their political opposition. At frc.org/speakers, listen to Ms. Strassel as she discusses about these issues affecting free speech.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. On Tuesday, Terry Jeffrey, who is the editor-in-chief for CNS News, joined guest host Dr. Ronnie Floyd to discuss the increasing number of Christian refugee admissions under President Trump and the decreasing number of Muslim refugee admissions. Here's Dr. Floyd.
You know, more than half of those admitted under Trump, President Trump, 51.2% are Christians, compared to 43.3% of those who arrived during the same period 1 year earlier under President Obama. Let me ask you where you sit with all that you deal with in your role. What do you see and how do you see this issue regarding the refugees?
Well, first of all, the last year of the Obama administration was really an extraordinary year for the United States in accepting refugees. We accepted a lot more, almost 85,000, than we'd had in any recent year. And a higher proportion of them were Muslims than any other faith. And that was extraordinary because in Syria, the Congress of the United States had declared, and the State Department under Obama had declared, that in Syria we had Christians being targeted for genocide by the Islamic State, and yet they were not being admitted to the United States as refugees, and almost all of the refugees coming to the United States from Syria in particular were Sunni Muslims, which is the sect to which the Islamic State claims to belong. So there's been a massive shift, with now there being a majority this year who are Christians. That's a massive shift from last year. But interestingly, they're still not coming from Syria.
Yes. Well, Terry, what about the religious affiliation of refugees, and how is that verified? Would you tell our listeners that today?
Well, this information comes directly from the State Department. The State Department is in charge of processing refugees, and they, on a daily basis, issue data, and we follow that here at CNS News. We did a lot of reporting last year about the overwhelming percentage of Muslim refugees being in the United States and the remarkably small number of Christians. But so the data comes directly from the government. It's hard data because these are actual people. They don't report the names of the individuals, but these are people who have been through a long process of being allowed into the United States as a refugee. So we know what country they came from. We know what religion they claim to be. And hopefully we know a lot more about them than that. But that's where the data comes from.
Well, won't there be folks who claim that this report shows Islamophobia from the Trump administration? Has that been said? Have you seen that? Will they claim that or not, Terry?
Well, you see the liberal media and liberal politicians all the time mischaracterizing exactly what was going on with Trump's refugee policy and trying to describe it as targeting Muslims in particular, which quite frankly was false. I mean, people can go on the White House website and look at the text of President Trump's initial order on refugees. And one of the things it said, it suspended refugee admissions originally from seven countries. And the liberal media say, well, these are predominantly Muslim countries. Well, for example, it did not suspend refugee admissions from Indonesia, which is the largest Muslim country in the world. It did not suspend admissions from Saudi Arabia. And even within, or Egypt, for example, but even in those countries in the Middle East, like Iraq and Syria and Libya, where they were suspending the admission of refugees under Trump's order, the order said that they, first of all, wanted to tighten up the rules to make sure they knew who they were letting in. But secondly, at the end of the suspension, they wanted to provide an advantage to people who were members of persecuted religious minorities within those countries. And within Syria, for example, which is a majority Sunni country, Shia Muslims were persecuted by the Islamic State, just as Christians. So Shia Muslims would have had an advantage under Trump's order. In Iraq, where you have a Shiite majority and a Sunni minority, Sunni Muslims would have been eligible for that if they were persecuted because of their religion exemption in Trump's order. So from the very beginning, the liberal media and liberal politicians were misrepresenting what Trump's order actually said. It was not a Muslim ban.
Well, Terry, I want to thank you again for being on the Washington Watch. Terry Jeffrey is the editor-in-chief at CNSNews.com. And my final question to you, and we only have just about 30 seconds for you to answer this question, how should our listeners be encouraged by this news in relationship to this issue?
Well, you know, I think there seriously was a security problem and is a security problem that we can't properly vet refugees coming in, particularly from places like Syria. We know that there's a potential for terrorists to come in, and President Trump and his administration is trying to do something about that. I think that's a very serious issue. I think they need to move forward and still try and deal with it in every possible way they can.
If you want to find out more about Terry Jeffrey and CNS News, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.